everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. Pretty chilly Wednesday morning when we're recording this, and that seems to be the weather at the moment. But pretty exciting at the moment with the Olympics on, and that's what our question is based around today. So I sent Jonty this question yesterday. I was like, come prepared. And the question was, pick your top three Coates League athletes that could win you a medal at the Olympics. And this could be in any sport, track or field. My answers are more track and field based. I know what yours are, but let's go one by one.
Yep.
And this will be a nice, fun conversation to start. And then we'll go into our talent league action. But I've got Josh Murphy would win shot put.
Yeah, I like that call. I've got Taj Houghton on the trampoline. We know how high he can leap and how athletic he is. So I'd like to see him in that event.
I didn't even know that was an event.
To be honest.
I was even trying to think about skateboarding and breakdancing, but I don't think I could come to an answer. Maybe Georgia Knight with breakdancing with her celebrations. Yep. That's about it. But Floyd Burmeister is... I've got long jump or high jump. He feels very athletic and to the point where he can leap over pretty big distances.
Yep. I've gone for Luca Grego in rugby sevens. He's obviously got the rugby background.
I got Maddie Albrecht in a 20-meter sprint pretty fast, and I'm pretty sure she went high in the testing day as well.
Yep. And I've gone similar to you with what you did with Floyd Burmeister. I've gone Georgie Brisbane in the high jump.
Okay, fair point. And then I got one that I just wrote down here. It's not even it's just a really weird one. Do you reckon Xavier Lindsay would win archery?
Because of how accurate he is and incisive with his kicking? Yeah, I don't mind that.
It's just a really odd one, but I just had
that. I just want to, and you said Coates League at the start. I actually had Luke Urquhart on my list as well. He's got a water polo background, so he could compete at water polo, his core strength. But we'll get into the main gist of things. Coates Talent League, there were some games on the weekend that we were out at. Eastern Dandenong I was at on Saturday, and it was a clinic by Dandenong. It was a masterclass. They kicked 4 or 5 goals in the first quarter against the wind, and that really set the game up. It was an 81-point win, 101-20. Sam Toner kicked 3 goals in the first quarter, and probably the big storyline to come out of the game, he kicked 5 goals, and he wasn't on Dandenong's list as recently as 5 weeks ago, added to the list after kicking 50 goals in his first 15 games of senior footy this year for Narre Warren. And he played alongside cousin Mitch on debut. Mitch Toner, obviously a very highly regarded under-16s player who will be one to keep an eye on from Caulfield Grammar in the next couple of years. But Sam Toner, really strong hands and took his chances in front of goal on a day where skills weren't that great. Some others that performed were Charlie Orchard down back, continued his strong form. Harry Doughton had his best game of the year. His composure and hardness in the midfield was really noteworthy. Harvey Langford's day finished early with a split lip, but he was pretty good before then. And Archie Leclerc, a bottom major, was very clean as well in the wet conditions as a hit up forward. For Eastern, Jordan Hyder was the main one who cracked in hard. He was the main one who came to compete. There weren't too many others that went with him. Christian Moraes was probably hurt a little bit by the exclusion of Josh Smiley, and Lockie Monteith tried his hardest in the ruck.
What's the issue with Eastern at the moment? Because they're in some pretty bad form heading into, you know, the back end of the year, and they haven't been, you know, half strength, I guess. Like, they're still got a decent team out there. What's the issue?
Yeah, well, they aren't playing as many 19-year-olds as they were earlier in the season, so that's certainly something. You look at someone like a Cooper Trembath who gets 6 intercept marks and 9 intercept possessions earlier in the season. That's sort of 6 to 9 extra inside 50s getting to ground that other teams are getting a look at, and I guess Eastern don't necessarily have the defence at the moment that's standing up, and I think you overrate, and you can rate Cody Anderson as highly as you like, but the defensive presence he adds to the midfield, which has the flair of Moraes and Josh Smiley, I think has hurt them a bit more than people realise as well.
Geelong beat Tassie 6-11-47 to 4-6-30. Now, I'm pretty sure these quarters were a bit short and the girls were, I'm assuming Tassie's flights were delayed or something like that, but it was a little bit of a shorter game. But Geelong got it done by 17 points, and Lockie Jakes continued his really good form from the champs into this one with 26 touches, 7 marks, I mean, 7 rebound 50s. It feels like he's really getting it done on both ends, just compared out of, you know, to out of D50 like usual. Noah Tullio, those conditions suited him pretty well. The wet and slippery ball conditions, 23 touches and 11 tackles for him, a really big performance there. Max Roney with 25 for the Tassie Devils. And I'll let you talk about Weston Gippy next.
Yeah, we'll talk about Weston Gippy. And Western started this game really flat. Gippy scored 3 goals in the first 5 minutes, and Western were then able to hit the lead. They kicked the next 6 goals, but then Gippy just outlasted them in the end. It was a pretty good performance from Gippy. The storyline out of this game is probably the 2 double bottom majors, Will Mallody and Marlon Neoclius, inside 50. So Will Mallody only had the 5 touches, but he had 4 shots on goal and looked really accomplished as a barometer for Gippy power inside 50. So to be that man when you're a double bottom major is a real nod to what you could become. He's got a little bit of Archie Ludwig about him in terms of he likes taking the responsibility, but he's still slightly built. But you've got to remember he's a year younger than Archie Ludwig, who himself is a bottom major. So he's going to be one to watch. And there were times where Asher Easton was playing in defence, so he was the main man up there and only the real key target. And he certainly relished that responsibility. Marlon Neoclius on debut, 8 touches, a couple of goal assists. And yeah, his pressure was elite. So that was good to see. Some others from the Gippsland Power, Alex Tarrou spent some time in the midfield and he looked really good in there, and he also went behind the ball when Western had the wind and was able to cut off the long high ball coming in and take some intercept marks. So he had a good game. And Jesse Craven as well, Asher Easton, marked really well in attack and in defence. For Western, Luca Grego was the main performer. 22 touches. It felt like he had more influence on the game than that, but he was the one who really cracked in. And when the team was going well, he was the one that was starting it in the midfield, played some time in defence as well. Darcy Weeks was quite good, sweeping off half-back. Good to see him get some continuity with his footy. Lachie MacArthur is one we'd love to see get continuity with his footy, but he did a grade 1 hamstring injury on the day. His day finished early and he had been playing a strong game up to that point. So that's a real shame because he was looking quite strong as well. He's put on a little bit of muscle, played some VFL games. But yeah, hopefully we see him in the back end of the season.
I'm moving now to Northern and Bendigo, and I'm going through Bendigo's fixture at the moment. From what I can see, they've lost 8 in a row, which is very, very concerning for them now in the back end. Yeah, it looks like 8 in a row. But Northern got the job done really convincingly, 118-64. They kicked 9 goals in both halves and, yeah, just blew the Pies away. I guess in terms of the biggest story, I guess, was Zach Johnson with 3 goals and 23 touches, and it's showing that he can impose himself a bit in another position. And
yep,
that's important for him in this back end of the year. Christian Lawson with 35 touches, can't let that go under the radar. From a Pyro's perspective, Archer Day-Wicks, again, 3 goals, 23 touches. So he's at least building some consistency now, which is good to see. And we're going to go through the ladder a bit later and talk about, you know, where teams sit in the road to finals and who can stand up. And he's definitely one of them. Toby Travaglia with 22 touches and 2 goals for the Pyro's as well.
Good to see him get some midfield time and add that goal-kicking element to his game. We haven't seen that yet as a resting forward. And we got lots of feedback about not putting Ollie Morris in our stats post. We did a story post on him last night. But, yeah, no, good to see him. He was omitted for a week last week despite some really strong form. So a surprise omission, comes back in, 28 disposals in a goal and 5 tackles as well. For a winger, he's one that really does lay some big tackles.
Yeah, and Gab Stumpf with 4 goals as well, that I don't want to let that go under the radar. Sims as well with 3, Riley Ormerod with 3. So they cashed in on the scoreboard tonight, so they certainly did that. And they've got it's a good win to, you know, set them up for the back end of the year.
They were missing James Barrett, where Bendigo, who got the opportunity at VFL level. Murray's 11-11-77 against Sandy, 9-5-59. Murray were just able to kick a couple of goals late in the last quarter to run away with it. And I guess the goal scorers there, the Whitlock twins combined for 5, and Murphy also chipped in with 3 goals. So, yeah, they're going to be really hard to stop. They haven't necessarily got the wins they would have liked this season. But when you've got 2 Whitlocks, Josh Murphy and Jared Berry, all in your forward line, if your midfield can go to work, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Cohen Paul didn't play with a minor hamstring concern, but I think that was more tightness than anything else. And Max Marnie continued his strong form from a Murray perspective. For Sandy, Luke Kennedy, who I know you really like, Nathan, he had 32 disposals and has really relished the opportunity in the midfield through the middle part of the year when he's got some games. Nathaniel Sulzberger played with Caulfield Grammar having the bye, 25-1 he had. And Jet Hayata, 12 disposals and 2 goals, but he will not play again this season after breaking his arm and having surgery. So that's a shame for him because he was starting to build some real momentum through the middle of the year.
That is devastating, to be honest. That's bad news. That is very bad news. I'll move to now Rebels and Calder, and this was probably the place to be for both boys and girls games. Calder got the job done by just 1 point, 9-15-69 to 10-10-70. So that's a big win for Calder. They are, if they just win every game, they finish in first. So they've got 3 more to do that. So a really important win. And Jacko was the big story here with 32 touches, 8 marks, 5 inside 50s, 4 rebound 50s. That's the real emphatic type of game that he needed to produce. And I think he puts together 2 or 3 more of those. He really elevates himself that quickly given his height. And,
yep,
you know, he's that versatile wing position. So that was really important for him. Nash Kim with 31 touches for the Cannons, 7 inside 50s, 4 rebound 50s. Pat said had a really big day out. 12 inside 50s is a massive number. 26 touches and 2 goals. We apologize. His stats were a bit in half on our stats graphic. But you're hearing these. This is what the actual ones were. John Tufall hit the scoreboard with 2 goals. And Ollie Hannaford as well. 2 goals and 16 touches. So looked like a really cracking game in the end. The Rebels are building some good form. They're going to finish down the bottom end. But, geez, they're every chance to knock off a top team.
Yep.
In the back end of the year, I think that's it.
Yeah, but yeah, the Rebels certainly a dark horse. We'll go to the girls now.
Yep.
Gippsland versus Western. I watched this game, 11-8-74. Gippsland getting the job done over the Jets, 4-6-30. And I think the storyline was Ash Centra's first half. She was a lot quieter in the second half, but it was probably 4 seasons in one day in that first half. It was really sunny, and then it was slippery, and then it was hailing, and then it cleared up again, but there was still a lot of water underfoot, and she was just so classy. She kicked 3 goals in the first half, all in different ways, all in really classy ways, set up some goals as well, and it's just another chapter to add to her ever-growing CV of best on grounds this season, 28 disposals and 3 goals. Grace Dillo, a double bottom major, showed her strength and composure playing in the midfield at times as well. I thought she was really good, and she kicked a goal as well. Luca Butters only had the 6 or 7 touches, but she was pretty good in defence, playing on Alex McBride alone and keeping her quiet. So her aerial work was quite impressive, and Alice Stoddart as well continued her strong form. From a Western perspective, Olivia Costello was probably the player who was best on ground. She was very important in defence for the Western Jets when they were looking to hold off Gippy, who ultimately just had too much footy in their front half and were able to eventually break the defence. Taylor Olivieri was really had real presence up forward as well, and I really liked her game. Sierra Graves, probably a little bit quieter, but she does always rack it up in the midfield. Had the 23 touches and a few really important clearances as well.
I watched Sandy and Murray, and Sandy got the job done, 4-4-28 to 3-7-25. Was slightly devastating watching Murray get so close again, and it was almost like a repeat of, it feels like every game this year, they fall behind too early and then they're playing catch up at the end. I mean, they kept Sandy scoreless in the last quarter and scored 14-0, but they was just fell so short in the end, which was, you know, disappointing. They've probably only got the Bendigo game to really get their last win. They played Dandenong, which is unlikely, but Bendigo, I guess, is a 50-50 in their form at the moment. But Sophie Mackay led the way for Sandy. I guess the difference in this game, Murray just don't have that real barometer. Like, you know, Bendigo have Painter at the very least. It's like Rebels have Millie Lane in there.
Yep.
You lose Molly McLaren in this side. That's a big difference as well. But Mackay was leading for Sandy. You know, her forward positioning, just quick hand. She had that. She produced that run and overlap that the Dragons really needed at times. Nikita Spiteri, I thought, was quite good for the Bushies, providing a lot of offensive movement out of D50. It just wasn't, I guess, the movement just wasn't consistent enough and wasn't flowing very well, and that was where this game struggled to really open up. Majella Day was really good up forward, took a really strong contested mark in the first half. She finished with 2 goals. Rain Dodd was really strong with 25 touches, along with Scout Howden from the Dragons. And one that I just want to talk about quickly from the Bushies, Eliza Roche. She had a goal. Felt like she had a lot more impact than that. That goal was really big. It was on the halftime siren, I think, and it put the Bushies, within a goal of the Dragons when it felt like it was close to just being, you know, a blowout, or not a blowout, but it was absolutely pissing down rain. So it was close to being a blowout if they weren't too careful. But shame for the Bushies. They're competitive. You can't doubt that. It's just that depth is not there compared to a lot of the teams, and it was close. But Sandy got the job done in the end, and that's an important win for them. They pretty much sew up 4th spot in the girls comp for Metro.
in the game between GWV and Calder. GWV got the job done, 3-9-27 to 3-7-25. Calder falling just short. For the Rebels, it was Tyler Crabtree, who's played a season of VFLW with Essendon and now coming back with the VFLW season being over. She was in the midfield, accumulated 22 disposals, Millie Lang 22 as well, and Brooke Ward with the 19. For Calder, Kyla Forbes had the 17 touches and Grace Azzopardi the 16. Shauna McAllegate is a prospect to watch for next year. She was pretty good up forward with 15 touches.
Easton got the job done, 3-9-27 to Dandies 1 straight 6, and there were 3 goals in the first 8 minutes before there was only 1 goal for the rest of the game.
Yeah, the weather really set in that one.
Yeah, weather was a big factor in that, but Easton got the job done pretty convincingly, and that's quite a big confidence-building win against a team they're likely to come up against in finals. Taylor McMillan with 32 touches, big day out, 11 tackles, Grace Ballany with 29. For the Rangers, Grace Bubba had a goal and 10 touches, but possibly injured again, so that's not ideal for her in this back end of the year. Hopefully she does get to play Metro. Georgie Brisbane finished her day with a goal as well. Gemma Reynolds led the way with 21 for the Rays, whilst Ali Simmons backed up her first good game back with 19 touches as well.
Yeah, and a few big tackles in that game as well from all reports. And just on Brisbane, she played on Zoe Basanko. So Zoe Basanko adding another string to her bow, going down back, playing on a really highly regarded contested marking forward. But speaking to some people at the game of Dandenong versus Easton, I think there was a little bit of disappointment on both sides that they didn't get to play each other on a dry day. They're two of the better teams in the competition. Yep. It would have been good to see where each other's at. It would have been good for the girls to show their weapons in a really highly skilled game. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. You can't control weather, particularly at Frankston, where rain seems to be a regular fixture in the game between Geelong and Tassie. Tassie got the job done, 3-5-23 to 2-12 against the Falcons. Like we said, there was a little bit of shortening of this game.
It's only 15-minute quarters this game, so quite short.
Yeah, as a result of flight delays, which have become a bit frustrating for Tassie in recent weeks. But Priya Bowring, 26 disposals off the back of a pretty strong championships, and Lucy Thompson, the 12 disposals and 6 tackles for Geelong. Sarah Howley continued her strong form, 24 disposals. Chloe Bryant and Stella Huxtable as well with 15 and 14 respectively.
Northern beat Bendigo 54-0-2-2. So pretty comprehensive win for Northern, who continue to claim their stake that they can compete in the back end of the year, and they've pretty much finished Bendigo's season. I think they mathematically can't make finals anymore. But Olivia Gorman with 28 touches for the Knights, 5 tackles, 3 inside 50s. Holly Ridewood with 23 touches, and Phoebe Hargreaves as well with 21. On the scoreboard, they only had 7 goal kickers and they were all individual scorers. So that's a pretty good effort from the Knights. Show a bit of forward versatility that anyone can go up there. Jamaica Douglas with 21 touches, 11 tackles, a big day for her in the back line. She's been in pretty consistent form. Excited to see what she does in the final game of the championships. But now we're going to go through, I mean, it's not a finals preview because we still got a couple games, but we've got one more round and then for the boys, and then the APS boys will come back. And there's actually 15 games this year for the boys, which I didn't notice until a couple weeks ago. So it used to be 13. Yep. So actually makes a bit of a difference. But we'll start with the boys. We're just going to kind of go through the ladder and talk about a few finals permutations, wild card, and what it means for a few teams. Yep. Who kind of needs to stand up in this back end of the year to ensure your team goes as far as possible. But Geelong now lead the whole competition. Actually, we'll go Metro and Country, because that's inevitably how it ends up anyway. But we'll start with Country. Geelong are on top, so whoever finishes on top for Country goes straight through to the quarterfinals and won't be involved in wild card. But when you look at Geelong, who's going to take them far in this year? My main man at the moment would be Lockie Jakes. I think his form continues into that back end. He's as dangerous as someone like a Hasty in that team with that offensive presence he could provide at times. And they got to the prelims last year off the back of just such strong team connection and their transitional movement. So he's one I think links up well for them.
Yeah, when I think of teams that really play as a unit, I think of Geelong and I think of Tassie as the two really well-drilled teams that really punch above their weight, regardless of how many draft prospects they've got. Obviously, they've got the Vic Country coach, Paul Corrigan, as their mentor. So, yeah, pretty not too shabby there. But, yeah, for me, it would be Xavier Ivicic getting it started in the midfield, the other real national championships player. And Cooper Ward's built some strong form as well. So, yeah, when you've got a team that's able to be really competitive in the midfield and able to get you inside 50s. To have someone that's able to convert is really important. The next in the country conference is the Tassie Devils. Obviously, they are part of the country conference in this. For me, the difference maker for them would be Oli Dipoli Qbank off the back of his strong national championships. You've got Lenny Douglas as well, who doesn't need a lot of touches to get much of the ball, to have a real impact in the game, But yeah, they sit a game behind Geelong and 8%.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said the same thing. They've got Charlie Bovell, who they did play earlier against the Knights. He kicked 5 goals, you know, double bottom major. To have someone like that that could come through and play in the back end. But yeah, they're currently on 32. Gippy are tied on them with 32. Or the country wildcard will be 2v7, 3v6, 4v5. So if it was to start now, Tassie would play GWV, which is quite likely still to happen unless results, you know, do fall a different way. But Gippy's next on that list, and they're one as well. I think they do punch above their weight. They're always a really connected group, given they come so far. Yep. Like, they seem to be the best country, real country group, you know, in this lot. Xavier Lindsay is obviously the obvious option, but I mean, you've seen what Alex Taru's done. I mean, even like your Asher Eastham's in that side. Yep. They always seem to provide such consistent output and real pace with ball movement. They would play Bendigo if it was to start today. So and Bendigo beat them early in the year, but I don't know. It feels like Gippsland have overtaken them now quite a bit.
Gippy had a win over them earlier in the year as well, so they might have played twice. But for Gippy, for me, the big thing that they do really well is they build their season really well, where their connection improves as the season goes on, where it can be hard for other teams to really maintain motivation within the four walls of the club as some different things sort of start to happen. For me, I'm going to say Will Mallody watching him in the last couple of weeks. They go from a team that has one marking forward in Asher Eastham, who's probably a little bit undersized, to having Will Mallody as well. They've got two marking forwards up there. I think he adds a real lot and gives them a spine as well. Obviously, you've got the obvious players as well, but yeah, I think he's one to keep a real eye on. The next one down for the country conference is Dandenong, who would play Murray if finals were played tomorrow. They sit 2 points behind the Gibby Power. Obviously, they had the draw earlier in the year. For me, it's Cooper Hines pretty clearly. He's won a few games just off putting the team on his back, and he's a really important leader down there as well. So, yeah, and he's got the flexibility to go forward or in the midfield.
Well, Mitch Toner with 7 goals in 2 games almost becomes an interesting Sam Toner, becomes an interesting talking point all of a sudden. You've got a Lark medalist in your team, which is always handy, but they've got decent role players around the ground. You look at Harry Dowden, you look at Charlie Orchard, who they'll provide pretty decent, performances in most of their games. They're interesting. If they play Murray in the first week, that's a real 50-50. It feels like, that could go either way. Metro is different, which we'll touch on. There's a lucky loser in their wild card. Yep. There's no lucky losers for countries. So you lose, you're out in the first week. That's the harsh reality of it. Next down is Bendigo,
Murray.
Oh, sorry, Murray. Yes, Murray. They're dangerous. Yep. They definitely could beat anyone that we've just mentioned there. Yeah, there's really no one I wouldn't doubt. Obviously, they play better at home. Definitely. I guess travel's a massive factor for them, but they're likely to play in Ballarat, which is where they did it last week. I'm assuming they're going to play in Ballarat again.
Yeah, they often do, yeah.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of firepower up forward, and that really assists them. And then they've got some players through the midfield that are in some strong form or have shown some glimpses at least and would want to have a big back end of the season. You look at someone like a Max Marnie, who's looking to come from outside the champs and propel himself. Colin Paul as well, who only played the one game of the champs. So I think they've got enough there. And obviously, if Matt Whitlock swings back, then they've got a key defender as well.
That's what I reckon their biggest issue is who's going to stand up for them defensively, because they do tend to get scored quite big against in crucial games. So that's where my worry is, can a Ben Kennedy step up and really provide a strong intercept presence? But if you had to pick between Dandenong and Murray at full strength right now, who do you reckon you'd go with?
I'd go Dandenong.
Yeah, well, that's tough. Murray don't perform very well in finals. They usually go out the first week. That's their only thing. I would just say Dandenong, but I think Murray every chance. Bendigo's next down on the list. I have absolutely no confidence in them, in all honesty. They've just proven
that. Fallen away.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing for them is they start in the country for the first 2 weeks if they were to get through the first 2 weeks. So they don't have to meet a Metro team unless they get to a prelim final. They would play Tassie.
Yeah, they would.
Oh, no, sorry. They play Gippy.
They play Gippy. yeah, I don't have much confidence in them either. They've got lots of top-end talent, and I think you can't doubt that. Yeah. Toby Trevallier, Archer Day-Wicks, Connor Evans, Tom Evans, Zayden Lockwood.
Their own right.
Absolutely, but then their depth falls away, so they don't have that middle layer in between your guns and your sort of fringe players, where other teams have your guns and then sort of some prospects that are really knocking on the door. I don't think they've got that middle layer like some other teams do, which is unfortunate because the season did start with such promise for them. But yeah, they are going to need to find a way to get things together late in the season. GWV is next down on the list, and they're the real dark horse of the race because they haven't had their full team together at all this season. We've got Sam Lawler playing school footy. He comes in for a game. He wins the match basically by putting the team on his back. Flynn Penry, Floyd Burmeister, Jack O, Connor Wiedemann, all these players that sound so good on paper. The big question for them is going to be, will they be able to gel as a unit in the last two games and then into finals, where other teams have been playing together sort of all year? But it's a problem that Sandy and Oakley always have to overcome when they welcome so many schoolboys back. If there's a difference maker for them, it's pretty clearly Sam Lawler. And I guess we didn't touch on one from Bendigo, but Archer Day-Wicks would be the one. He doesn't need much of the footage to make an impact.
Well, I mean, Rebels, if you're looking at it at the ladder, they just took it up to Calder, who are equal first.
Yeah.
And obviously Metro are the stronger conference. So again, I don't really look at any team in this country conference and think the Rebels would have much of a struggle. So they'd play Tassie, but the thing is for them, they'd finish because they'll 90% finish last unless they win and overtake Bendigo. But they'll keep being the bottom seed every time. So they'll just come up against teams, you know, won't want to play them really. Yep. But we'll move to Metro. Sandy and Calder are equal, but Calder are a game behind. So like I said, all Calder have to do is win every game and they'll finish first, which is absolutely ideal for Oakley, who were in last. Now, I am obviously saying that Oakley would likely beat Calder, but that is probably the truth with the full strength Oakley side. But we'll start with Sandy at the top, who would play Oakley if they finish first, and that would mean 2 weeks in a row where they play each other. Sandy, take your pick, really. I would still start with Josh Dolan. He's going to be
Who I've got. Yeah. Because they've obviously got Murphy maker. Reed and so many players like that, but Josh Dolan's the one that kicks all the goals and has the hard running capacity as well. But they've got 20 plus players, and selection's going to be a real squeeze for them. We move on to Calder. For me, Damon Hollow's got the speed and electricity in the midfield, and he's a real difference maker for them at the moment. If the season finished tomorrow, they would play Western 2 weeks in a row in the last round of the season, and then again in finals.
Well, no, Eastern are fifth. They're fifth. Is how poor they've been going at the moment, and there's no guarantee they jump as well, so that would be an interesting clash. So with Metro Conference, it is a 1st v 6, 2v5, 3v4. It is top three plus a lucky loser, as obviously there's an odd game of numbers. So if Western lost and none of the top teams above them lost, Western would go through right now. But for Calder, I have a really weird one. It's Harry Ryan, who kicked 0-4 on the weekend.
Yeah.
But that, you have a player like that who kicks 4-0. That's like a difference.
He's got X factor.
He does, definitely. We'll move to Northern now, who, I don't know, they sit third. Are they really the third best Metro team in it? I mean, it's interesting. They play well as a team. They always do. I don't think the depth will take them very far, to be honest. I mean, if they played Western, I'd still back them. But any further than that, I'd be quite interested. I guess Tom Sims is the one that you get him firing most games, and who's going to stop him in the back line?
And I'd say Jesse Totoli coming back from Kerry Brook Grammar in the back end of the season. The Western Jets, it all starts with Luca Grego, I think. But if I was going to give another one, Tom Burton actually looked pretty good in the first quarter. So coming back from Caulfield Grammar to finish the season with them, the bottom major, will have some responsibility off the half back line. But yeah, for me, it'd be those two.
Jack Girardi is minor. He's able to pop up for a few, like 3 or 4 goals in a game. So exciting if he does get going.
He has been locked down a couple of times in the last few weeks,
which is the limitation with him. So can he break free from that? Eastern are in fifth, so they are on 20 points. So they're equal with Western on percentage.
Yep.
And the next, Northern are on 22. So there's quite a big gap between second and third. Calder on 36. Northern are on 22. So there is, top two is sealed for Metro, so it means at the very least both those sides will be in the quarterfinals, I think, unless Sandy lose, really. Like, They should both be getting through at the very least. But Eastern are in a lot of trouble. I don't know. I can't. Like, if they do have to play a Sandy in the first week, they're gone.
For me, the difference maker is Cody Anderson. If he can get back for one or two games towards the back end of the season, that'll make a real difference to that midfield mix.
And I'd have to agree. You know, I've had my opinions on just his game, but as a team player, he really does make such a difference in this side. You've got Josh Smiley, but, like, he's not going to win you the game. Like, you know what I mean. He's not going to physically win them the game. Well, other contributors.
The thing is, because he's been averaging 30 a goal and 10 clearances, and they're still losing. So then he needs some help. Yeah, definitely. And then Oakley, we moved down to, have only got the 3 wins, but we know when they get the schoolboys back, they're going to be really hard to stop. They don't have too many weaknesses.
Yeah.
It's just they haven't been able to pick up wins through the middle part of the year. They've played 74 players, which is absolutely staggering to think about, but they've got so many prospects. I guess Finno Sullivan's the one for me who's going to want to really boost his draft stocks in the last few games of the season, and I think we're going to see the best of him.
I'll say Louis Emmett. You've got Jago in there, you've got Tom Gross, who are all X-factor, but Louis Emmett's become a real... tactically, he's become that real X-factor for them, where you can put him up forward and he all of a sudden becomes this real tall marking forward who defenders can't shut down, and then you've got smalls that will usually crumb up if he doesn't mark it anyway, so... He's one who I think would be quite dangerous. We'll move now to the girls. Yep. We'll start with Metro. Oakley, so the way the girls will work, Metro will only have a wild card. Country will not. So when Country play their last round of fixtures, Metro will play the wild card in that same round as well. So it'll be 1v6, 2v5, 3v4, which is not really that good of an idea when we look at the difference in class this year. It probably won't end very well for, you know, Calder, who'd have to play Oakley, but... Who's the difference maker for Oakley? Because they're the clear premiership favourites. Eastern's just below them, but you'd still think there's quite a gap between them from what
it's seen this year. Yeah, well, I think the percentage indicates that 299 compared to 199. Yeah. They're getting big margin victories. For me, it's Emma McDonald, the contested marking forward, being able to do that in the girls' game, really influential.
I'm leaning towards Sarah Powersty, but I think Maggie Marnie's equally in that conversation as well. Eastern sit in second. They play Western in the first week in the wild card round if it was to end today, which is... pretty likely, but it's Oakley 40, Eastern 36, Northern 32. So they're all quite close. Yep. It could change. I think Oakley have pretty much sealed it, though. Eastern, they're in good form. They can win it. It's just a matter of can they really put together four quarters against, well, it's pretty much Oakley, to be honest. And if they have to come up against Northern, that'd be quite an interesting contest as well. I do think it starts with Georgie Brisbane and it ends with her. That seems when she gets firing, they really get firing.
Yeah, and Georgia Knight at her feet would be the other one, I'd say. Northern Knights, you touch on. Yeah, I think they're one that probably surprised a few clubs this season. They have had maybe a softer draw than some other teams. I think there has been some talk around about that. But I guess if there's a player that I'm gonna look at, it's probably going to be Zoe Hargreaves.
I'd say Kira Lemire up forward. She's had some really productive performances, a great marking target. And I guess it's Northern's question is, can they score enough against the top teams? And it'd be interesting to see if they can. Sandy in fourth, I feel like their season's kind of just teetering away. Yeah. I mean, we saw they were struggling against Murray. They just had that extra bit of class. So they'll sit fourth and they probably will go through as a lucky loser, but I don't think it'll be pretty weeks for them they'd play Northern, then they'd have to play Oakley. So be pretty tough. I mean, it's Sophie Mackay. You've got Daisy Flockhart and Scout Howden. I'm assuming you agree on that one. It feels like they're the ones who would cause the upset if they were to.
I guess we'll touch on Calder and Western as well. I think Calder are relying on Kyla Forbes to have a really big day out. And then for Western, Sierra Greaves is the clear gun, top age, Alex McBride loan as well.
Yep. And for the country, it's no wild card. It's just top four will go straight through at the end of the year. So they won't have a wild card to the side that it will just be as per normal. So Bendigo and Murray won't be in this conversation as they are ineligible now to make it through to the top four. But GWV are only one game behind Geelong, so they have to keep winning to get that finals spot. But it looks like Geelong would be most likely in the form they're in. Tassie will start with. They played Geelong in the first week. They're always there each year, it feels like, and it's going to be a very similar finals to last year in terms of the girls. It might end up quite similar get to prelim week, but... Where do you start with Tassie? I mean, do you look at...
Lucy Thompson, for me. Yeah. She's really powerful in the midfield. She doesn't necessarily have as many touches as some others, but you really notice her when she does touch it.
Hopefully, Sophie Stron is back in the, for the back end of the season. Really do hope so. She deserves to to play some good footy at the back end of the year. Move to Gippy, I mean,
clearly
obvious answer, but where do you look after that? Because Alice Stoddard's been putting together some really good performances. You watched them on the weekend. I guess who's going to spearhead them through to that next week of finals if they can overcome Dandenong?
Grace Dillo's been garnering some chat with her ability this year, her composure, her strength. She's a double bottom major, but she seems to really have adapted well to the level and has really strong game awareness as well and makes the right decisions. So she's one to watch. Good to see Gippy rising and sit second in the country conference is a big rise for them. Dandenong Stingrays sit third. We know they're probably a little bit better than the ladder would suggest. Yeah. They've had some injuries and that sort of thing throughout the season, some things to juggle. Ali Simon's the clear player, given she's just back from injury. And how well she's started. She's only going to get better with time.
Kayla Dalgleish, for me, I've always seen her as a bit of an X factor. She provides that spark. Dandy and Gippy are locked on points on 28, Geelong are 24, Tassie 32. So that could still go either way, that conference, in terms of who plays who, but looks likely it will probably stick the way it is. Geelong in fourth. I mean, I guess that if you look at it, they're technically the dark horse of this. They just don't seem to really click against the top teams. And I think they're capable of beating Tassie, but against the Metro team, I just doubt the depth in class there. Can they get it done? I mean, Sarah Howe is that barometer in the midfield, but who can they call upon as well to perform really big? But I'm sure you've got others as well.
For me, I'd say Stella Huxtable is one, given her form for country in Geelong in the last month or so.
Kiara Woods is another I'd throw into that conversation, given definitely. she provides a good role tactically and Rebels. I mean, they're on 20 points. It feels like their season has been very up and down. I don't think they'll make a lot of impact if they do get into that first week of finals. They haven't really competed too well against the top teams in their conference, but starts with Millie Lane. I mean, you've got Claire Marnie in there as well, who's a massive X factor for them as well.
Yeah, that's pretty much mirrors what I was going to say.
And yeah, Bendigo and Murray are pretty much out of the conversation. Murray 100%, Bendigo is pretty much 5% chance. They are 100% out. They can't make it now. But that wraps it up for this week. Wanted to give something different at the end and preview a bit of what it's looking like in the next couple of weeks. But Talent League this week again. Then it'll be a week off for Talent League, but Vic, Metro and SA will play in the Girls Champ, so that's a grand final in theory. And then Vic Country and WA, so excited to be at that in 2 weeks' time, but we'll be at a lot of Talent League footy this week. Make sure to check it out next week when we recap it. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you next week.